From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Rafael, California.
I'm from San Jose.
Hayward, California.
Nopa.
Kind of lower Russian Hill.
I live across from El Metate in San Francisco.
Coming up, we answer a listener's question about one of the Bay Area's most distinctive sounds.
You know, it's like a giant with their hand on the giant chalkboard.
Then an East Oakland comedian finds his voice at his grandma's funeral.
And it got to the point where people that were outside of the funeral home would look inside, like the big window, and they would see people laughing, and they would actually come into the funeral to see me.
And we dig into KALW's history to find out which employee has been here the longest.
I started out volunteering here. I'd never been in a radio station before.
The legacy of sound, today on an extended edition of Cross Currents. One of the things we're proud of here at KALW is our people-powered journalism project called Hey Area. Everyday citizens write in with questions, and our reporters find the answers. We've answered questions like, where did San Francisco's tent camps come from? And why is the Richmond-San Rafael Bridge so long? But there's one topic that seems to inspire more puzzlement than anything else in the Bay Area. BART trains. BART writer and KALW listener Michael Mackin wanted to know more, so he wrote into Hey Area, and KALW's transportation reporter Eli Wertschafter went out to find him some answers. Here's Eli.
Every morning, Michael Mackin gets on BART with two bags. There's a satchel where he keeps all his work stuff, and a backpack where he carries his two adorable little dogs.
Cooper, look at me. Cooper, speak.
Cooper, speak. Cooper and Jetta are the most well-behaved pets you've ever seen, and they are totally chill commuting in a backpack. If only their owner Michael had such a pleasant time riding BART.
Yeah, I get to work and I feel like I've just gone through an ordeal.
BART hurts his ears. And see, Michael, he's more concerned about his hearing than the average person. It's because of something that happened to him when he was a kid.
As a child, like most kids, I loved swimming.
And one day he was swimming in a pool and he felt this pain in his ear. Turned out he had an ear infection and it burst his eardrum.
It was very painful and blood came out. It was not a very good day in my life.
He had to get surgery. They cut his ear most of the way off and then put it back together.
There was a fear that I would, you know, might lose my hearing in that ear.
After that, Michael likes to be cautious about his hearing, especially on BART.
You know, it's like a giant with their hand on the giant chalkboard. It's really uncomfortable.
And that's the reason why Michael rode into Hey Area. It's why we met. It's why we ended up on BART together. He wants to know.
So can BART damage your hearing?
What?
I'm wondering if the loud sound on BART can damage your hearing.
Good question. So to find out, I went from one of the loudest places in the Bay Area to one of the quietest.
It isolates the patient from any movement or sound we make on the outside.
Dr. Xuan Lim is a clinical audiologist here at the University of the Pacific. We're in a silent room where she gives hearing tests to her patients.
Parents love this room. They always say, "Can I bring it home with me?"
That's because daily noise in the city can be a strain for anybody. When you're exposed to any loud noise,
BART or concert or restaurant, sometimes you may leave feeling a little deafer.
Dr. Lim explains that inside your ears, you have these little hair cells that pick up sonic vibrations. And if you hit them with a loud enough sound,
you can actually blow off the little hair cells from their attachment on the membrane.
Yow. Those hairs will reattach themselves, but only so many times.
I like to tell my patients, if you think about walking on a lawn of grass, when you walk on the grass bends, but the next day they're fine. But if you continually walk on that same patch of grass, it just kind of ruins the grass and the grass goes away. It's the same thing with your hair cells in your ear.
So being in loud places like BART every day can hurt your hearing. But how loud is too loud? Dr. Lim gets out the charts.
I knew you were going to ask.
She knew it. Here's the question. Michael rides BART for an hour every day. How loud is too loud for an hour?
So let's see here. If they give it to you.
Found it. According to NIOSH, that's the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, the safe limit is 94 decibels, about as loud as sitting in the back row of a Billy Joel concert. Louder than that, probably harmful. So, time to do an experiment. Dr. Lim and I leave the clinic and get on a train. We want to see if the average noise is less than 94 decibels.
So we're on the BART train, and we're about to head through the tunnel. We have a sound level meter in my hands, and we're going to measure the amount of noise exposure on the train.
Dr. Lim is holding a device that looks like a giant high-tech thermometer.
With a really big, fluffy ball on the end.
It measures noise, in decibels, over time. Our plan is to ride from downtown SF to MacArthur Station in Oakland and back again. The train starts to get loud.
We got a new peak of 113.
113 decibels is a lot, but that's the loudest we got. The average was much lower. Remember, we hoped the average would be less than 94 decibels. And what did we get?
When we were underground, the average noise level was around 86 to 88, and above ground, anywhere from 68 to 76.
So, bottom line, based on NIOSH standards and our brief sample, BART is okay. But, says Dr. Lim, you're better safe than sorry. In her professional opinion, BART riders like Michael should protect their ears anyway.
Michael, if you are bothered by the noise and you're consistently on BART, I would definitely get some earplugs or noise-canceling headphones.
All right, so I brought this back to Michael, our question asker. Turns out he owns noise-canceling earbuds. And he wears them like a pro. Instead of drowning out the BART noise with loud music,
often I'll put the headphones in and I'll turn the noise canceling on and I'll read.
But the noise of BART still bothers him. So Michael isn't satisfied.
Is there anything that we could do moving forward to quiet the experience?
What else can BART do? Well, they hear you, Michael. And they've been working on it.
We have found a way that it's going to prevent the loud screech that everyone knows.
This is Alicia Trost from BART. We're in the Hayward maintenance shop looking at a wheel truing machine. The machine basically grinds wheels the same way a potter shapes a spinning vase.
This will be the machine that will get the new attachments to cut the new profile.
The rims of the old wheels are flat. The new rims have a tapered design that helps them turn more quietly. But it will take 2 or 3 years to switch all the wheels to the new design. Until then, Michael is protecting his hearing as best he can. And so his thoughts turn to his dogs.
I often wonder, too, whether I should be putting earmuffs on them. And they make earmuffs for dogs.
Should dogs protect their ears on BART? These dogs are like, nah, what noise?
And he doesn't seem to care. Not like his owner. I care.
In a BART tunnel for Cross Currents, I'm Eli Wirtschafter.
Thanks, Eli. And just a little PSA, you test your eyes, you check your teeth, but when was the last time you checked your hearing? Look up your local audiologist so you can keep listening to KALW well into your golden years. Mama, no shade. Mama, no shade. All the water don't mix. Surely old don't go good for no fish. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Musician Zoe Keating is a one-woman orchestra. Her unique style of music has won her acclaim, and all the while she's remained an independent artist. KLW's Martina Castro spoke with her at her home studio about how she experiments with the sound of her instrument. All the music in this story was performed live during this interview on a cello and a laptop.
Zoe Keating is walking me around her house. We're looking for woodpeckers.
They're not doing it now, though. We call them tree penguins, which people laugh at. But
why penguins?
Because they look like penguins.
babies.
Sometimes we make it really loud again in the evening. And they sound like, they're like...
There are many sounds that surround Keating.
The blue jays.
The neighborhood dogs. And some less natural sounds.
Chainsaws.
That's amazing to me.
Chainsaws and wood chippers.
It's fitting to find Zoe Keating in the middle of this natural cacophony, because inside her studio, that's exactly what she creates when she sits down to compose.
Like, I'll spend 8 hours, you know, I'm just recording parts and I'm like in the groove and I'm just adding layers and layers and layers and layers, and it gets bigger and bigger, and then it goes in new directions, and then I clean it up later. So I almost, it's almost like there's two parts to it. There's the kind of like getting it all down, and then the cleanup and the refining.
And the getting all down, that's an improvisational thing. Yeah. It's just you jamming with yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. I'm jamming with myself. It's like me down here having a party with like 16 other cellos. and I really love that part of it. Like, I just, I love like adding up all the layers, and things get totally over the top. Like, it's just like, how many cellos can I possibly have?
When Keating says that, how many cellos, it's because of how she constructs her songs. She records a phrase. Then loops it. Then plays on top of it and records that. Again and again, creating layers upon layers of sound. That's why she's called a one-woman orchestra.
When I'm mixing down, I might actually have like 48 tracks. And but it's like a percussive sound might be created out of like 6 or 8 cellos that are all layered up to get a particular kind of tone.
Keating started playing the cello classically when she was 8, but she had paralyzing stage fright. In college, she discovered electronic music and started improvising soundtracks for her friends' films. She found that when she improvised, the stage fright would disappear. While recording for one of her friend's projects, she started really experimenting with the sounds that could come out of her instrument.
I was really interested in the things that were kind of not musical, little screeches and...
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, can I do it? Can you hear it if I do? Mm-hmm. Sort of just a Ponticello is a good one. You know, like when... Here's a regular cello sound. And then if you move the bow up a little bit... Hear how that's different?
Yes.
So there's a lot of potential in there.
Yeah.
And other things like you can tap with the bow in your fingers, or you can shuffle.
Wow. That's literally you just put playing the bow on the side of the instrument.
I'm just playing the wood of the instrument.
The wood. Yeah.
So in 1994, Keating moved to San Francisco, and she started layering those various sounds as she composed. But she says there's a major difference between the music she creates in her studio and what you'd hear on stage when she performs those same compositions in front of an audience.
When I'm in the studio, I'm striving, like I'm trying to recreate this a feeling and something that's inside my head. I'm trying to recreate it perfectly. There's like something very, very concrete that I'm going for, and I'm struggling to make it. And it takes weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. I think that's true for writers, too. It's like you have an idea and then you polish it and you polish it and you polish it and you polish it. And it takes a long time for everything to finally click and you know it's done. Whereas on stage, it's something that happens right there in that moment between me and the audience. It's like the culmination of what I'm feeling that day and the music that I've written. And it's different every time. Sometimes, like, I'll try to make it really, really, really perfect. Like, I said I was doing that, like, improvisatory process where I'm just recording. And then I'll go back and I'll say, like, okay, well, I'm going to record this one a little bit better. But that never works. It's always the first take with me because it might have some technical problems, but it's always going to have the right feeling. And so in some ways, maybe being on stage is the first take.
I mean, it's amazing that what you're able to do while your hands are on an instrument. I mean, you can't use your hands to do anything other than play. But then your feet, you're tapping on things. There's about, 10 pedals that you've got. And you're thinking how many beats ahead of what's happening.
I'm not really thinking in beats, really. I'm thinking in musical shapes and phrases. So I'm thinking about the overall shape of a piece, and I'm thinking of it phrase by phrase.
So what's actually happening when you're pressing the pedals?
I'm running three different programs on the computer, and the computer is controlled with MIDI messages. So these MIDI messages, they tell the computer what to do. It's basically like your hands. So, you know, record now, stop recording, record on this track, stop recording, fade this down, fade this up, pan, things like that. All the things you might do if you were a DJ. The messages are pre-programmed in some cases. It's almost like a score, like a musical score, but it's a MIDI score.
But these are parts that you are recording live.
Yeah.
You just have maybe told the program, okay, store these, I'll come back to you.
Yeah, it's like a mixture of sampling and live looping. So one program samples things, so it like records the cello and then stores it for later. And then other times I'm like recording and I'm recording on top of it where you can hear sort of like a delay kind of thing. And I just combine those to try to make it interesting.
So do you ever improvise on stage and live performances?
I try to do it every performance, actually.
Would you mind improvising something for us? And then maybe afterwards I might ask you what made you go in that direction.
You know, it's so abstract, I don't even know how I could possibly describe it. It's more like shapes and colors. It's a completely non-verbal, non-direct thought kind of experience where it's almost like I'm painting. Like when I make some sort of atmosphere or, you know, pattern in my mind, then I have to balance it out by something low on the bottom, and then I have to add little things on the sides, and it's sort of maybe I'm an abstract expressionist. I think that my goal is to have the audience experience it like I do. I don't know what that means, but I'm always trying to go there and trying to figure it out.
That was musician Zoe Keating talking to KELW's Martina Castro. Keating's latest album is titled Into the Trees. You can also catch her this January touring with Radiolab's Jad Abumrad in Santa Rosa. For more information, go to KALW.org, click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Bay Area comedian Stroyd Moyd has been doing stand-up since he was 16, inspired by his dad, Big Stroy's sense of humor and way with words.
I'm very dark-skinned, you know, I'm blacker than the average black person, you know, and that's cool. I'm so black that if I walk outside right now, I would literally disappear into the darkness, all right? That's why whenever I get arrested or hassled by cops at night, when they see me, they be like, freeze, freeze! Smile and keep your eyes open. Then I close my eyes and I disappear like the Knight Rider.
Stroy spoke with KALW's Jen Chien about jokes, skateboarding, and his comedy hustle.
My name is Stroy Moyd. I'm a 28-year-old stand-up comedian from East Oakland, California. Not Oakland, California, but East Oakland, California. All about positive vibes and making people laugh. And we about to get it cracking. Stroy Moyd, hashtag hella funny. Yeah. Was that all right?
That's the best idea that anyone has ever given. So, Stroy, you're from East Oakland originally, right?
Yes.
But I understand you also lived in Berkeley as a teenager.
Yes.
So tell me how that move affected you and your family. What was that like?
Berkeley helped me discover another passion in my life, which is skateboarding.
And how did you start skateboarding? I mean, tell me how.
I actually started skateboarding in Oakland because my brother used to skate. And I went to this middle school called Elmhurst Middle School. It was on 98th and 1 in a really bad neighborhood. I didn't want people to know that I skated. I was like in the closet skateboarder. So when I got like a block away from the school, I had to take my trucks and my wheels and undo them, unscrew them, and put them in my backpack, take my deck, hide it in the bushes, and take my Vans off, and then put on some Jordans, and then walk to school with this little, oh, I'm a hood swag. But then right when I left, I went to get my skateboard, put it back in, and then I skated home. But when I moved to Berkeley, like, it was okay to be a black dude that skated, you know? So I was like, all right, for sure, this is my new home, you know?
It's like a kind of code switching, not a verbal code switching, mm-hmm. but like a physical.
Wait, because when you're a young kid, you really want to fit in. You don't want to make, because like right now, I don't care if I fit in or not, because I just know that it doesn't even matter. Just be yourself and be true to who you are. And if you don't fit in, that's just whatever. You know, that's how I taught myself now. But when you're a kid, you're impressionable. And if people make, you don't like to be laughed at or be teased, because that just, you really attach to the content when you're so young, to all the negative stuff that go in your head. So you just get sad and depressed because, oh, you're a black dude on a skateboard, a white boy destroy, you know. But back, but now I don't care. And now skateboarding is popular for everybody anyway, so now it doesn't even matter. But
do you think that kind of experience affected your comedy?
Yeah, because all the best art comes from the most darkest places, I believe, you know. Like, if you look at one of the best rappers, you look at Eminem, you know, he lived one of the most messed up lives, but you listen to his album, it's like, so he has so much content to grab from because he's been through such a deep, like a hard life, that he can always have something to rap about. Even like you look at Richard Pryor, the comedian, he was married 6 times, he like burned himself on fire, but he's like, you know, not even arguably, he is the best stand-up comedy in the history of, but it sucks to say that, like, you know, the more messed up your life is, the better you're going to be an artist, but that's just the truth, because you just have more stuff to pick from. On a personal level, you know, if you have a bad life, you got a lot of stuff to talk about.
I know that you have spent some time in Hollywood, and you've toured quite a bit. You've been in this business for about a decade now.
You did your research.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
So I also saw that online you've been marked with this up-and-coming label for a few years now. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, how do you keep yourself fresh and keep yourself motivated in this tough industry where you could be called up-and-coming for a while, but maybe still not quite crack the market that you want to crack?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's funny you said that, because last year I did Comedy Day, and they do that every year in September.
That's the annual San Francisco Comedy Day, right?
Yeah, and at that point I was doing comedy for 9 years, and I was on stage as one of the new faces in comedy. And I look at the people who's also a new face, and there was people who were like open micers that I like met, and they're like asking me for advice. But it's like, got these guys that have been doing comedy for 1 year or 2 year, and I'm a new face. I just never really tried to attack, you know, becoming a successful comedian. I just always just love being a comedian. So, you know, the comedy and the content is there. Just like when I first started, the business part and trying to make it was never there, because I wasn't really trying to make it. I was just having fun doing comedy, you know. But now that I'm a smart guy, well, I don't want to say I'm a smart guy, but, you know, I know what I'm talking about. And I know that if I wanted to like succeed, if that was my goal, my ultimate goal to succeed, you know, it'd be a wrap for a lot of people. But I just love doing comedy. But now I'm at the point where, like, okay, it's been 10 years. It's time to start making some real money. So now, from now on, it's about to be over. It's a wrap.
Well, you have been doing this for 10 years, but you're still a young man. You're 26. So mm-hmm. you started doing
28.
Comedy. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, 28.
You started doing comedy when you were a teenager. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that. How did you get started so young?
The first time I went on stage was at my grandmother's funeral. So when I was when I was 15 years old, I have a really big family, and my dad is somebody, you know, passes away every 3-4 years because there's just so many of us. It's just kind of, you know, numbers game, I guess. But my dad is usually the person that goes on stage and talks at funerals whenever somebody passes away. And my dad has the same name as me, Stroy. Well, I have the same name as him. He got the same name as his dad and his dad. But that's a different story. So the pastor said, oh, we're going to have a word from Stroy Moore. And I looked at my dad, and he was just laying down, like, crying. And he kind of looked at me, and then he pointed at me to go on stage. And I'm like, I've always been dreaming about being a comedian, so let me just go up there and try to tell some stories. So I went on stage, and I started telling stories about my grandmother.
Can we stop for just a moment?
Yeah.
It was your grandmother's funeral, but you immediately went to comedy?
Yeah. I went there. I saw everybody crying. And I said, you know what, let me try to turn this around and make people laugh. Because that's what my dad does. My dad's a motivational speaker. And so that's what he does. So, you know, I just went on stage and I just started telling stories about her, you know. And it wasn't planned. Nothing wasn't prepared. Wasn't written out. I just kind of freestyled and just told stories. And everybody were laughing, like the whole funeral. It was like a full-fledged comedy club, you know. And it got to the point where people that were outside of the funeral home would look inside, like the big window, and they would see people laughing. And they would actually come into the funeral to see me. So people actually that didn't even know my grandmother just came in because they saw people laughing. And then they sat down and they laughed and they enjoyed the rest of the service because they saw me making people laugh. So from that point, I was like, you know what, I gotta try comedy. So then I waited a couple of years and actually I did it the next night and it wasn't good. Then I waited a couple of years and then I went on stage and it was good and I just kept going from there.
That's an amazing story.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
That was Bay Area comedian Stroyd Moyd speaking with KALW's Jen Sheehan. You can see Stroy Moyd do his thing this Friday and Saturday at the Comedians with Criminal Records Showcase in San Francisco. All the information is at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. All hour long, we've been bringing you sounds from across the Bay Area, from screeching BART tracks to looped cellos to laughter at a local comedy club. If you live in Oakland, there's a good chance you'll recognize this next one.
This time it's love, my foolish.
That sound was recorded at The Alley, a long-standing piano bar with a much-beloved singer at the center. KALW's Colin Peden has more.
Tonight is like a lovely tune. Beware my foolish heart.
Tucked in the back of a darkened bar, a young man sings to a ring of people surrounding an old piano. On top is a tip jar, partially filled with crumpled bills. The singer sits with a drink in front of him, casually holding a mic.
My name is Ben Benjamin. I've been coming here probably about 9 months. I heard about it from a friend, and I felt like it was something I wanted to experience to get the full gist of Oakland and all that it has to offer. And I walked in, and there were people doing these songs that I had been listening to for half my life and keeping them alive by singing them. I was delighted.
This time it's love.
Welcome to The Alley.
My foolish.
A piano bar and steakhouse in Oakland where people come together every week to sing, or maybe, like Thursday night regular Kent Kessinger, just to sit back and take it all in.
Do you like to sing?
Occasionally. I like watching the old guy tinkle on the keys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How about a round of applause for Rod Dibble?
Well, I'm Rod Dibble, and I'm here at The Alley on Grand Avenue, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights.
Rod Dibble's the piano player. He's been playing here almost every week for the past 55 years. All that time at the keys means that Dibble has memorized a huge repertoire of songs.
I've got about 4,000. I try to learn a song a week or two songs a week.
Yeah.
That's so he can stay a few steps ahead of the requests from the singers, who gather around his piano each week, waiting to take their turn at the mic.
With you on a new day, well, who can I turn to if you turn away?
When a singer does particularly well, Dibble rings his cowbell in appreciation. Dibble's relationship with the singers is what keeps a lot of people coming back, week after week. Like Ray Ingesert, who started singing here on a whim.
Yeah, I was sitting at one of these tables back here with a friend of mine, and I was just like, Jesus, you know, these people are murdering these songs. And my friend's like, well, go up and sing something. I'm like, oh, okay. And yeah, that was 30-some-odd years ago now. Almost 30 years ago. So, yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while, but by the time Ingesert found the alley, Rod Dibble had already been playing here for nearly a quarter of a century.
This could only happen to a guy like me.
Yes.
That only happened in a bar like this.
Dibble tells me that when he started in 1960, Oakland had a much different bar scene.
There used to be five piano bars on this street alone. And then now it's karaoke and, yeah.
Yeah.
We're the only piano bar now in Oakland.
And that's something that the regulars are proud of, to the point of modifying show tune lyrics to be about the alley itself.
When each time I'm down, the alley is. It's making me clown. The alley is. Why I just sing like a star.
There you go.
It's my kind of bar.
So head over to the alley on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights and try it for yourself. For Cross Currents, I'm Colin Peden.
The alley is my kind of razzmatazz. And it has Rod Dibble's jazz.
Like this. Hit it!
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. We're ending today's show with a little bit of history. As you may have heard, here at KALW, we're celebrating 75 years of broadcasting this month, an achievement made possible in large part by our listeners, who are involved in so many ways. Some make financial contributions, some donate their calligraphy skills to address envelopes. We're looking at you, Laura. And some help us make stories. That's what Heather Hernandez did when she decided to ask us a question with Hey Area, where listeners tell us what they want to know. Heather has been tuning into KALW for quite some time.
And then the question that kept coming up in my mind was wondering about the people at KALW who are making this radio that I've always enjoyed.
Specifically, who has been here the longest? Our resident historian, Stephen Short, decided to hunt down the answer, along with Heather. Here's what they found.
When you look for longevity at KALW, there are a few contenders. But as with most such lists, there's only one who ends up on top, and that's Bill Helgeson. As he told Heather,
my title here is operations manager, which basically covers these days a lot of the business functions of the station, make sure the bills get paid. Make sure people get paid.
Bill Helgeson walked into the station in 1986 when it was at O'Connell High School in the Mission District.
I started out volunteering here. I'd never been in a radio station before. I basically did some office work for about 3 hours, one afternoon a week kind of thing. And then at some point they even said to me, hey, Bill, one of the other people who's working here is going to be on vacation. Would you like to, can we hire you and just for like a couple of weeks? And I said, sure, I'll do that.
Time passed, and 30 years after beginning that short-term assignment, Bill is still part of the 24/7 life of this radio station.
That means you sometimes get phone calls in the middle of the night, and sometimes I get phone calls at all hours and all days of the week. So it's not just a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday job a lot of the times.
But if he has a choice, Bill would prefer that you call during regular business hours. Two other employees we should mention include board operator and Folk Music and Beyond host Joanne Marr. She started here in 1986. And the late Alan Farley joined the station in 1975. He hosted multiple programs and worked here right up until his death in October 2012, an impressive 37 years. Now, one of the reasons I get these history assignments is because I've lived through more history than many people at KALW. That's a kind way of saying I'm older than most. I was the first volunteer for the news department. I got here at the same time as Cross Currents host Hannah Baba in 2005. Longtime listeners know that she originally shared hosting duties with Holly Kernan, our founding news director. Hannah told Heather about how she discovered KALW.
I was doing my internship in news at KQED at the time.
got a call from Holly Kernan saying, well, listen, I know you're finishing up, and I'd love it if I could talk to you about, you know, a news department at another station, KALW. Do you know what KALW is?
And did you?
Crickets.
We're pretty sure she knows what it is now. The very next year, in 2006, Your Call host Rose Aguilar arrived.
And I actually started also as a guest on the Friday Media Roundtable, because I, at one point years ago, was running a newsletter about women's issues before blogs.
But as it turns out, this wasn't Rose's first time in radio.
In college, I DJed a heavy metal show. I still like heavy metal music. And actually, in the past couple of months, I've seen AC/DC, Black Sabbath, and Metallica, and I just got tickets to see Guns N' Roses.
Fine. Well, before we end, what is the one thing that makes you smile when you think of KALW?
The energy in the station. It was very small when I started. And it's been amazing to watch the news team and Cross Currents grow. And I love seeing so many young people in the station and even older people who maybe worked for 20 years. And I love radio and I really want to find out what it takes to create good radio.
And this is certainly the place for that. In the KALW newsroom, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.